This is Bill Tiller of Tiller.org. You're listening to BBSRadio.com. Don't forget to tune in to The Infinite Consciousness with Eva Herr every Sunday at 7 p.m. Pacific Time. Enjoy.
Welcome to Infinite Consciousness tonight, and thanks for listening. This is Eva Herr, and I've got with us Dr. Tom McGuire, and we're going to talk about his new book, The Poison in Your Teeth, and we're going to talk about mercury, and his second book, Tooth Fitness, which is a guide to healthy teeth. How are you, Dr. McGuire?
I'm fine, Eva. How are you doing?
Thanks for coming on.
Oh, thanks for having me.
I was just telling you, every time I read your book, it makes me get angry. This point, not because it's a bad book, but because it makes me get angry about what mercury does to us that no one told us. So why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and where people can find you, where people can find your books, and then we'll get into a discussion.
Okay. Well, I've been a dentist for nearly 40 years, and for nearly all of those, I've been a mercury-free dentist. So my area and interest in dentistry has always been around the oral health issues that actually can affect your overall health, not just about gum and your gums and teeth. So the book you mentioned, Tooth Fitness, was about that in regards to preventive dentistry, preventing gum disease and those things. And then Poison in Your Teeth is about mercury amalgam fillings, which release mercury and can have a major effect on your overall health. And then I also wrote a book called Mercury Detoxification to help those people that now want to have their fillings out, their amalgam fillings out, and want to get rid of the mercury in their body. And I have a website that covers all these issues and talks about my books. And, you know, it's a couple hundred pages of just about all the information somebody could want to have on these subjects. And that's www.dental.com/dental. Wellness, WellNess, and then the number 4 and the lowercase letter u.com. So phonetically it sounds like dental wellness for you, except there's a 4 and a u at the end. And my toll-free number is 800-335-7755.
And that website has your books and everything on it, right?
Yeah, thanks for asking, because yeah, all three books are there available for sale through my website. The Poison in Your Teeth is a brand new book and just out, and it's also available in the bookstores, Barnes & Noble, for example, Borders.
Well, it's a good book, I tell you what, but like I said, it does make me get angry when I read it. So, let's talk about, first of all, what is mercury? So, just for the listeners who don't know for some reason, and what does it do to us?
Well, a great question, because it's interesting. Mercury is actually the most poisonous, non-radioactive, naturally occurring substance on our planet. And there's no safe or harmless level of mercury. Even one atom in your body is going to do some harm, even though it takes a lot more before any symptoms expressed. And it does just about everything, directly or indirectly. It can affect our health in literally 100 ways. I have the list of common symptoms on my website and in my book. And what I find is interesting is that people know about the poisonous toxicity of, say, arsenic and lead and cadmium. But mercury is way more poisonous than they are. I think people kind of got used to the term because, you know, mercury the planet, mercury the car, mercury the astrological sign. But when somebody says arsenic, you know it's a poison, and you wouldn't want to have somebody give you a little bit of arsenic every day, no matter how little that was. And yet, mercury is continuously released from amalgam fillings, and we're exposed to that every day that we have those fillings in our teeth. And how much depends on a lot of factors, like how many fillings you have and how long you've had them, all that kind of stuff.
So how you've got a lot of the symptoms are... sound like heart disease symptoms, tightness in the chest, severe chest pains, nausea, tiredness, diarrhea, shortness of breath. How do you know which one it is? Or, for example, in magnesium deficiency, how do you know?
Well, one of the things is there are a lot of other health issues that can contribute to some of these things. We know cholesterol and things like that. can contribute to heart disease. And you can actually go get tested for that. You can also get tested for mercury. In my book, I talk about the tests, and I have them on my website, too, so that you can find out where you can go and have the test done that will tell you if you're mercury toxic. And then if you know you have a lot of mercury, you know that it can be contributing to these issues, like the health ones you said. And that's very important. And generally speaking, everyone with amalgam fillings, if you've had them for any length of time, and you have any one of these 100 related symptoms or diseases, you can be pretty sure that it's affecting you to some degree or another. But at least you can test for it, and then you can take steps to not only have these amalgam fillings, silver amalgam fillings, removed safely, but also then make the effort and take a little time to get involved with the detoxification program that will help take this mercury out of your body.
We're actually going to get into that, too, by the way. I want to do that. What is it that it does to us? I mean, why is it so poisonous to us? Talking about free radicals and how it affects cells and enzymes and, amino acids.
Well, one of the things that makes it so toxic is that the mercury vapor that comes off the amalgam filling and you inhale is fat-soluble, and all the cells and the lining, the blood-brain barrier that lines the brain, because mercury is classified as a neurotoxin, so it can pass the blood-brain barrier. But because it's fat-soluble, it can pass through cells of every single cell of the body. You know, there are trillions of them, and start to accumulate there. And then what it does is it has an affinity for a, not to get complicated here, but for a sulfhydryl group that is on proteins and amino acids. And what it does is it knocks off the mineral that's normally attached there that allows these proteins and enzymes to function properly, replaces it, and starts to alter the function. And over time, depending on how much you're getting, it can alter the function so much that a symptom can start to be expressed, like the ones you mentioned. But I think it's also important for your listeners to know that as a neurotoxin, it's not just a physical aspect of the health, our health, that's affected by mercury. It can also affect us emotionally and psychologically. And this is where a lot of people can relate to this: mood swings, memory loss, depression, fear, anxiety. I mean, there's a whole list of actual neurological issues that are more emotional that chronic mercury poisoning can contribute to.
Okay, I have a question here. I know that we have a lot of estrogen promoting materials in all of our foods. And I know that our plants are starving for minerals because our soil is so depleted. So have there been studies that, because all those things cause the same kinds of symptoms, you know, have there been studies so that you know which one it is? Because the reason I ask that is because I took my kids to a new dentist the other day. And one of the questions that I asked him when we got ready to leave was, what do you think about mercury fillings, and do you take mercury out? I forget, holistically, I think is what I said. I can't remember. But he said, well, you know, there's not really enough research out there, and we don't really think that we have to worry about it. And I was flabbergasted. So what's out there?
Well, today more and more information has been made available about the toxicity of these fillings, and the American Dental Association has done its best to keep dentists from talking about it in its, you know, in its own way, as far as threatening them with possible loss of license. So the information has been sort of, you know, leaking out, you might say. But what's interesting is that today in Europe, for example, Norway, Sweden, and Denmark just this year have banned amalgam fillings forever. No one can use them. And this country is coming closer and closer to that. The FDA just did a ruling a few months ago, saying, you know, in effect, the result of a lawsuit, so they were pretty much forced to do this, that amalgam fillings, the mercury they release, can have neurotoxic effects on the nervous system of the developing child, nursing baby, and fetus, and the pregnant woman. Not that they say they should avoid seeking dental care, but they should discuss this with their health practitioner. So more and more information about it. I don't think anybody that does even a cursory study of the effects of mercury and the fact that mercury vapor is released from amalgam fillings could ever say they shouldn't be concerned about this this issue.
Glutathione. Can you talk a little bit about glutathione and alpha-lipoic acid? Because I use that supplement sometimes, you know, and they're chelators, but also the alpha-lipoic acid helps the lung, but and also makes the lung feel like it's can make it feel like it's deprived of oxygen. So how does that work?
Well, there's two ways to pronounce it, the way you did, and then also glutathione. So some people might know it from either one of them. It's an antioxidant. It's the most prevalent antioxidant the body manufactures. And it's one of the few, alpha-lipoic acid is the other, that can actually act as a natural chelator and remove heavy metals from the body. And the problem is, I mean, that's the good news. It can only do it up to a certain amount. So if you're getting more mercury in than you can take out, it'll be stored, and that's where the problem comes. But in the process of removing mercury, both glutathione and alpha-lipoic acid can't detoxify mercury like a lot of things that it does in the body. It actually has to physically escort it out of the body. So in the process of removing mercury, and it can, millions of atoms of mercury a day can be removed, a couple molecules of glutathione is lost forever in the process. So over time, the body becomes more and more deficient in these two important antioxidants. And then the more deficient they become in that, the less they're able to do all these other things that they function for, like you mentioned, in getting rid of free radicals, which is a very, 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 very important issue, health issue that people have to deal with, regardless of whether you have mercury or not. The body generates, you know, trillions and trillions and trillions and trillions of free radicals all the time, and they have to be neutralized, or they can contribute to just about every degenerative disease we have. So what's important is then to supplement in a way that allows your body to increase the levels of glutathione. But like with anything, whether it's a natural substance the body makes or needs, you can always get too much of a good thing. You know, you can get too much water, for example, if you went to extremes. So you always want to do this in an informed, educated way. And I explain everything about how to do that and how to get involved in the natural way to remove mercury from your body in my mercury detoxification book.
Do you have to take some kind of cofactor if you try to supplement glutathione or alpha-lipoic acid to make it chelate, or do you just take that supplement?
Well, that's a good question. I can tell you're informed about this. That the glutathione taken orally, well, I'll back up a minute. Glutathione is made by the body from three different kinds of amino acids that are found in protein. And the key one is cysteine. And so what happens is that they know that if you take oral glutathione, even though I think it supports the health of the intestine, it doesn't by itself increase the body's supply of glutathione. So what they use is a precursor or a type of cysteine that's called NAC, N-acetylcysteine. And it's found in health food stores usually under the NAC label. And also, I have these essential mercury detoxification supplements available on my website. But when they take NAC, they've shown from studies that it can actually increase the body's ability to manufacture more glutathione. So that becomes an essential component of any mercury detoxification program.
Okay. What about the alpha-lipoic acid?
Well, it's a similar... excuse me. It's similar in that it's an antioxidant, but what's unique about it is it's also fat and water soluble, which makes it really unique. It means it can go into areas that are covered, you know, like the cell membranes that are fatty, it can enter into that, or in other tissue areas and stuff where it's water soluble. So I think that it will probably become one of the critical essential supplements of this next decade. The problem is the body makes it, but it doesn't make very much of it. And one of the reasons, I believe, is that the body's never been, you know, had an onslaught that it has to deal with of mercury and other heavy metals. So, consequently, it's easier to deplete the levels of alpha-lipoic acid.
So can you supplement it?
Yes, and that's it's an important one because you can actually take alpha-lipoic acid and it's assimilated. And again, you know, I have that available and it's also available in health food stores. But it's an important component of total health, And it would be necessary to have it even if you didn't, you weren't, you know, chronically mercury poisoned.
What about, let's talk about your role, because I want to get into a little bit about other stuff too. If somebody, if the doctor is going to remove them safely, what are the recommendations for that?
Well, excuse me, that's the difference between what I call mercury-free dentists and mercury-free and mercury-safe dentists, and dentists that might not put amalgam fillings in but don't remove them safely. And the key thing here is to protect the patient from excessive exposure to mercury or minimize their exposure. And if you don't do this in a safe way, there's a large, it's relatively a huge amount of mercury vapor is released when you drill out those fillings from the teeth. And one of the reasons this happens is that the amount of mercury vapor, because mercury itself, elemental mercury vapor like you used to see in thermometers,
mm-hmm.
is used to mix the other material that's in amalgams, like zinc and copper and tin. And they mix it, and then that forms a paste, and it's hardened. But when you drill it out, it increases the temperature tremendously of that filling. And it's the direct relationship of temperature that causes more mercury vapor to be released. So the procedures or safe protocols that are used by mercury-free and mercury-safe dentists, and I have the largest list of them on my website, too, is fundamentally designed to minimize the amount of mercury vapor that's released. They keep the fillings extraordinarily cool. They keep water on them all the time to keep the temperature down. They take them out. They drill them out in a way that they can just chunk them, so they don't have to drill very much to get the fillings out. And then what they do is they have high speed suction and they put it right there to capture the mercury vapor. And some of them recommend having a alternative source of air. They'll put a nasal hood on your nose so you can breathe air that's not immediately surrounding them.
Has there been a lot of incidents with dentists having these problems? Used to, you know, they would use those masks that were the thin kind of paper cloth stuff.
Yeah, the cotton stuff. And
yeah, I would imagine that it would go through that.
Oh, yeah, it goes right through it. Mercury is very, it's highly assimilated by anything. It's so small, the molecule is so small, or the atom of it, including what they used to use a lot to protect what's called the rubber dam that many people that are listening probably experienced. And the latex rubber dam, the ones they use now, mercury, if you breathe through your mouth while you had that in there and they were drilling out, that mercury vapor could pass through that rubber dam. So although it has uses in dentistry, it's not going to protect you. And I always recommend that people, regardless if they have that alternative source of air or not, during the removal process, breathe through your nose.
And talk to us a little bit about touching the filling, you know, with toothbrushing and with hot liquids. Does that affect it?
It sure does. Like I mentioned earlier, anything that increases the temperature of the filling will cause more mercury vapor to be released. So friction, for example, teeth grinders will generate a lot of friction and heat and release a lot of mercury vapor throughout the night when they're, for example, when they're grinding their teeth. But what's interesting about this, to get to your specific question, yeah, toothbrushing will actually increase the temperature. Chewing on abrasive foods, even chewing on gum, drinking hot liquids. The direct connection here is in regard to the temperature that, you know, these actions cause the tooth or the filling temperature to be increased. But what I found over the years really interesting is that the government regulatory agencies insist that when any of the material that goes into an amalgam filling enters the dental office, that's the mercury and the other powdered metals, they have to be placed in a hazardous waste container. When the dentist takes out the amalgam filling and you have little particles and chunks of it, they have to put those particles of that amalgam filling in a hazardous waste container to protect the environment and the dental office and the staff. Well, when they put them in your teeth, what does that make your teeth? Hazardous waste
container. Like I said, it makes me angry.
Exactly. And it should, you know, it should, because people should be told and have a choice on this. But and they also recommend that the dental staff not touch the amalgam. They should use some, the rubber gloves. But when they're in your teeth, you know, your tongue is touching it. I mean, it's insane about these regulations. They should cover the patient as much as anybody else.
I want to ask one question, and then I want to ask the question about litigation. But let me ask this other question first before I forget it. I'd like for you, and it may be hard to remember all these things, but the Lichtenberg study symptoms, because I know a lot of people have these symptoms and they go to their doctors and the doctor says, well, you don't have enough potassium or you don't have enough magnesium or you don't have enough fluids, but I'd like for them to know about these symptoms so they can consider an alternative.
Mm-hmm. Well, I have them in the book and I also have them on the website in detail, and it lists, first of all, it lists the symptoms and diseases related to mercury poisoning, so you can go in there, a person can go in there and say, oh, or in the book for sure, and look at them. For example, do you have ringing in your ears? You know, it's related to asthma and even muscle aches and cramps, a whole list of things. But also what I did was list the improvements that were shown in these various studies that were done. What they did was they took a list of symptoms of people that had the amalgam fillings, and then they listed all those, and then they had the fillings removed, and over a period of time, it's different with the different studies. Some were a number of years, some were 4 years. Then they they evaluated these people again after this period of time to see what kind of improvement was seen. And so this is not totally scientific, it's more subjective, but it's very real to the people that went through this.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, they had these symptoms, some of them, again, I said, you know, lack of energy, it's related to gum problems, metallic taste, allergies, headaches, chest pains, etc. Fatigue, especially, chronic fatigue.
And that cramps, I thought, was interesting, because so many people have that nowadays. You know, they have a new drug for it now.
Well, what happens, and this is a very good question, because I think it's time that the health professional, the medical doctor, et cetera, alternative health professionals should really become aware of this whole issue, because they're treating people really not knowing what the source of the problem is, because they, you know, it could be a lot of other things, but it could also be mercury in those people that have the fillings. And so here they're treating somebody and can't find what's wrong and they can't find the right treatment, so they just start treating symptoms.
Mm-hmm.
And as you know, symptoms doesn't really deal with the problem. So I have a section on my website that addresses this for the health professional and tells them why they should be concerned about these oral health issues, including amalgams and gum disease, because if they're not, they'll never really be able to be effective in treating their patients.
Why have we not had class actions, or have we, and I just don't know about it?
Well, that's happening. There have been suits. The one I just mentioned earlier about the Federal Drug Administration, the FDA's ruling, for the first time ever, an agency has actually said these fillings can be harmful. You know, the American Dental Association for 150 years has said, no, don't worry, no problem. Even after they admitted that mercury came off amalgam fillings, they still say, don't worry. So now this ruling was the direct result of a lawsuit by Mothers against mercury. And they sued the FDA for not acting on making a ruling on the toxicity of these fillings, which was mandated by Congress over 30 years ago, and they never acted. So in response, that's probably one of the most significant lawsuits that have been filed. There's been some smaller ones filed against dentists, some against companies that make amalgam fillings. One of them even involved the American Dental Association, but they said, we don't have anything to do with this, even though they say they're safe. They said, we don't have anything to do with lawsuits because we don't manufacture it, we don't buy it, we don't put it in fillings teeth. So they, in essence, passed that responsibility back to the dentist. And if there's any pro-amalgam dentist who have believed what the ADA said and think they're going to protect them if more lawsuits come about, they're mistaken. And I actually tell them what they can do about that in the book.
I would imagine they're going to have to be really careful if that suit goes to trial and they win.
Well, that could be disastrous, and I don't think anybody really wants that to go that way. Everybody's hoping that the ADA will just say these fillings shouldn't be in people's teeth, and so we're going to not use them anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And that will take care of it. But they're still not doing that. And, you know, I just think any dentist that is still putting them in who's not informing their patients, just like you said, you were angry about what you didn't know. And if they would even give them both sides of the story, otherwise they're not going to be protected. And that's why it's so advantageous for patients to find mercury-free, mercury-safe dentists, because they do know about this and they are doing what is necessary to protect their patients in the dental care.
A little bit about your detox book. I mean, I know we can't go over everything because it's a pretty thick informational book. But can we talk about supplements and probiotics? Do supplements work? And if they do, how long does it take for them to work? And what about probiotics? Is that a necessary thing for someone to do?
Well, yeah, I include that. Mercury, for different reasons, has an effect on the health of the intestine. And what it does is, because mercury passes through, and you can get it from eating fish too, mercury-contaminated fish, but when the body is releasing mercury into the intestine, the flora in the intestine, that when they're in balance, they're good for us, but when they're imbalanced, they cause problems, and mercury makes them immune to a lot of things, including in most of the drugs that are used to treat them. So there can be overgrowth of certain, you know, intestinal flora. And that's where probiotics come in as a supportive role, because they can help reinstall more or less the really healthy bacteria and help them balance that out. But there are essential, I have in the program, I list all the supplements that I think are necessary and important, not just to help get rid of mercury, but to, you know, for intestinal health and in brain food, that you're going to need supplements in that area to help replace and restore the cells to health that have been damaged by mercury. But the important thing is, in any kind of health issue, when you can identify the source of the problem, in this case, the main source of mercury for anybody that has these fillings are the amalgam fillings. So what you want to do is you want to have those safely removed, and that sort of takes care of the input. In other words, you've shut the faucet off. But if it's still in your body, and it is in most people's cases that have these fillings, it's doing some harm. And so the next step is to say, okay, I've got rid of this source, no more is coming in, but now I want to get rid of the mercury that's stored, because that's the only way to get rid of the symptoms. So then you want to do the next step, which is mercury detoxification, and start not introducing so much, you're really supporting your body's efforts to do what it does really well. You're just giving them the materials that the body needs to do this. And again, in the book, there's a whole list of them, and the ones that I consider essential, even though I think it's important to add to these things, are the glutathione that I mentioned, and the NAC, and the alpha-lipoic acid, and selenium, and free-form amino acids, vitamin C, and multivitamin and multimineral. And this becomes the basic aspect, sort of the foundation of the program from which you can add to it.
Kate, let me ask you this. Does it matter if they're natural organic supplements or laboratory designed supplements? And also, does it matter, is there minerals that are distinguishable like that? I've never asked anyone that question or thought about it.
Excuse me. Well, it's very difficult to get food enough supplements just strictly from food source vitamins. I agree that it's important to eat naturally and organically, because you know you're getting things that are healthy and you're not getting the things that aren't good for you. But once somebody has become so deficient in some of these critical things, like glutathione, for example, even though we can get the substances, the amino acids the body needs from food, I don't believe it's possible to get enough of those things from food to rebuild the levels of glutathione that have been depleted because of mercury. So most vitamins are synthetically made. You can look at in the health food store and they'll say this is a food-based one, but you see the dosages are very, very low. So I don't mind people supplementing with that, because they'll contain some things that maybe a synthetic vitamin wouldn't. But most of them are manufactured just to get the kind of quantity that you would have. And I don't, you know, there's been arguments about this over my lifespan as far as what's better and what's not. And if I could get the same amount of vitamin C, for example, totally naturally, that's what I would do that. But if I couldn't, I would get vitamin C that's I know is manufactured and it's pure and it's controlled and regulated. And that's why I offer my supplements, because they are. They've been the company that I get them from has made that statement. They have they've been tested by the good manufacturing practices, and you can't tell that unless it's on the label. You don't know for sure. So I would, you know, suggest going for the products that you know are pure.
I thought, though, if it was manufactured in a laboratory, or that it changed the structure of the molecules. So it's kind of like fitting around a square peg in a round hole. So I'm not telling you this, I'm asking you. So if that's true and somebody's really sick, how can they get better using a supplement that's like trying to fit around a square peg in a round hole?
Well, some studies have shown that there might be a little difference, a left and a right view of them, so to speak. But generally speaking, now they can make it so you wouldn't be able to tell the difference. I mean, as far as, excuse me, if it didn't work like that, we'd all be in a lot of trouble because they couldn't use supplements. So again, I think the ideal, I discuss it in my book, in the detox book, I say that what I consider the ideal diet, which would be healthy foods and the right amount of raw foods, et cetera, and living in a healthy environment, no pollution, and all these other things, it's almost impossible for us to find that kind of environment today. So what we're dealing with now is not just prevention. We're dealing with also treatment, in a sense that we have to add these things in higher quantities just to help our bodies deal with the onslaught of these toxic chemicals in the environment we live in. So I just think that I think that might be true, what you're saying. I don't think there's enough evidence for me to say that the vitamins that you can get that are made purely and, you know, basically that you know what you're getting
will
work.
Well, it has
to be
different, or they couldn't patent it.
Well, it can't. I mean, you know, even Linus Pauling.
Something's got to be there, different.
Yeah, Linus Pauling, the sort of the father of vitamin C, and, you know, how important it is. He understood that, you know, you can't, for example, vitamins are preventive in nature. They work best when they can prevent something from happening. But when your body's overpowered, it needs a lot more to help get it back to health than it needed to prevent it.
Right.
And so, you know, his thing was sometimes you'd have to take 10,000 grams of vitamin C a day, depending on the situation. So, you know, we're doing probably things simultaneously. We're trying to prevent things from getting worse, but we're trying to treat it and help repair the damage so the body can get back to an optimal state of health.
Okay, I won't keep you stuck on that topic. Just good.
Well, it's a good one, and that's one of the reasons why, you know, I wrote the detox book. In there, you know, if somebody didn't know very much about this or was uncertain about what they did know, I just don't talk about, here's what you do for mercury, take two of these, you know.
Yeah.
The understanding, you'll be able to know just about everything you want to know about vitamins and how they work, including natural things like chlorella and stuff like that.
Okay, I would start asking things about, should we take citrate or aspartate, but is that discussed in here? I can't remember.
No, not so much that part of it. Again, I focus on the whole title of the book, of the mercury detoxification book, is the natural way to remove mercury from your body. So everything I talk about is natural, and that sort of predisposes that, you know, you want to stay with as many natural things as possible. Aspartame is not something that, you know, you don't get it in an orange, for example.
Okay.
Or other sources of vitamin C. So I would stick to a really healthy diet as much as possible, but I always feel in this modern society that we need to supplement that diet with the things the body needs and probably are deficient in.
Okay. Now I want to talk about trying to have a healthy mouth and gum disease. What is your perspective on fluoride?
Well, that's a good one. It's been controversial for some time, and I've been against water fluoridation for 35 years. I don't support it. I don't think it has anything to do with freedom of choice. It's sort of pushed upon us. It's, fluoride is a known toxin in not very high amounts. And so the idea behind water fluoridation, I think, was well-intended. It was sort of like a vaccine. We can prevent cavities from this. But the problem is that you have to get exactly the right amount during exactly a certain period of time when the enamel of teeth are forming. If you get fluoride after the enamels have formed, it doesn't do you any good. And in fact, it can accumulate and cause harm. Too much fluoride, let's say, it's easier to look at it this way. Ideally, in water fluoridation, you want to have one part of fluoride per million parts of water. If you get up into 1.5 or two parts per million, which is not very much more, right? The teeth can show, if they're given that fluoride during their enamel development, can show what's called fluorosis. And they become stained and pitted, and they're quite ugly, and usually they have to be treated. So it doesn't take very much for this to happen. Well, what's going on today is that we're not just getting fluoride in the water, and, you know, it's hard to control it. Somebody could drink 10 glasses a day, and somebody could only drink one. But we're getting it from toothpaste and mouthwashes and in supplements. It's now kind of...
Wow, I never thought about it like that.
It's kind of all over. And so it's very difficult, if not impossible, to monitor that. And even though buying toothpaste is freedom of choice and having fluoridated treatments at the dental office, which I'm actually not against, but when you're dealing with fluoridated water, what they've seen now in certain parts of the country is that there have been cities where the water isn't fluoridated, but now they're showing this high incidence of fluorosis in teeth that have been formed during this period. And some people's conclusion on that is that, you know, this is coming from the fact that people are getting so much fluoride from so many different sources that, you know, it's too much.
What is the time period that it's crucial? And I guess, when should the kids use it if they use it? When should they not use it?
Well, if somebody says, well, I still want to have water fluoridation, right, for my family, and I'm not going to buy bottled water, you know it's...
Or toothpaste.
Or toothpaste. Toothpaste is actually, I'd like to start with that one first, because in a regular tube of fluoridated toothpaste, you know, a small one, kind of, you know, the 6-8 ounce one, if a young child, 3 to 4 or 5 years old, swallowed that whole thing, it could make them very sick or even kill them. That's how much fluoride's in there. So children up to a certain age, maybe 3, 5, 7, it depends, they pretty much swallow a lot of what gets in their mouth. It's very hard to just say, rinse and spit it out. So I don't think that's a safe way to help prevent your child's cavities, and you can do it naturally just by teaching them how to brush and everything. But the ideal time is to have the fluoride when the enamel of the permanent teeth are forming. I would not want a child under 6, for example, to have fluoride anyway, because you never know how much they're going to get and they're more vulnerable. Mm-hmm. But usually from about, the enamel starts forming when they were 3 or 4 years old, so that makes it a problem. And then the enamel stops forming probably when they're 17 years old, when the last the wisdom teeth come in. So after that, it doesn't do any good for anybody. Fluoridated water doesn't do any good as far as gum disease goes, and 70% to 80% or more of the population today has gum disease, and partly, I think, is even when kids' teeth are healthy and they don't have decay, they don't have any motivation to brush, and then pretty soon gum disease shows up, and so you have another problem.
Does colloidal silver or hydrogen peroxide, does it do any good to rinse with those things to prevent gum disease?
Yeah, anything that is bactericidal, that kills excessive bacteria or certainly disrupts them, can be useful. And in fact, mainly if it's not, you know, harming you. So hydrogen peroxide used correctly, colloidal silver, salt water rinses, certain mouthwashes, etc. But the most important thing is that you need the right dental tools. And you mentioned tooth fitness, and that's, I have a whole chapter, two chapters, on one on all the dental tools that are available and another one on how to use them.
What can the average public get all of the dental tools that they need at? Where do they go? Drugstore?
Well, everything somebody would need would be in a drugstore. I have some unique dental products on my website, including the ones that I consider the most important. And, you know, I leave the brush, the choice of the brush and the toothpaste up to the individual, but I always recommend going to the health food store and getting natural toothpaste, because the FDA doesn't regulate toothpaste because it's not supposed to be eaten. But some of it we're assimilating. So if you get a commercial toothpaste that has a lot of these funny named things in there, including red dyes and all these different dyes, mm-hmm. some of that's going to go into your body. If you get a natural toothpaste, it's made of natural things, so if a little bit went in, it's not going to harm you. And they all will work just as well. The bottom line is it's not the brush, it's the brusher. It's not the floss, it's the flosser. You just have to know what tool to use and when to use it and where to use it.
What about, what is the correlation between candida and gum recession? Is it all just brushing too much that makes gum recession, or is there something else? And does candida have anything to do with it?
Well, not really. You can get oral and, you know, there's oral vaginal candida.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not really an effect on that. Mostly what causes recession is gum disease, because the gum infection will progress to the point where it gets into the bone and dissolves the bone, and that makes the bone go down, and then the gums kind of go down with them. You can get some recession in certain areas if you brush wrong. If you're, instead of brushing up and down in this kind of little circular motion and getting in the pockets, if you're brushing side to side, you know, like you're sort of with cutting down a tree kind of thing,
mm-hmm.
That can push the gums away over time and cause some recession. And just aging. You know, our teeth erupt a bit, a little tiny, tiny amount every day, depending on how much of the tooth is worn down. So if somebody has a very abrasive diet over 40 or 50 or 60 years, that can mean the teeth would start to erupt a little bit to fill that space that's lost from the abrasion, and it will look like there's recession.
Can the gums grow back ever?
Well, not really. But what they have today, in other words, if you lost the bone, the gums basically are attached on the bone. And so if there's no bone to attach them, they just kind of dissolve down. I mean, they settle down. Today there's techniques, you know, the periodontist who does these, works on gums mainly, can add, do transplants with various materials to rebuild the bone that's been lost. And then the gums will actually, they can put the gums back on there and they'll grow back up, and they can restore that to some degree. So that is more possible today than ever.
Wow. Are there any supplements you can use to support the gums?
Yeah, I'm always for, first of all, having a good solid base, which means having a really good, decent multivitamin that you use as your sort of foundation, and then you add to it as needed. Probably the single most important, of course, the vitamin A and vitamin E are too, but the single most important vitamin for gum health and to help fight infection is vitamin C, ascorbic acid. They've done studies where they've shown where they've given it to people after they've had surgery, and the ones that got it healed better and faster than the ones that didn't. It works to keep the connective tissue. That's what our gum tissue is made of. That kind of holds all the cells together.
Mm-hmm.
That's a very important part of that. So people that are deficient in vitamin C and have gum infection, the infection will proceed much faster than, for example, somebody that was taking a lot of vitamin C. They would get that more internal support.
Okay, I lost my train of thought. Oh, I wanted to ask you, I've always heard that each individual socket is directly related, kind of like meridians, to a particular
mm-hmm.
kind of part of your body or a particular disease or a particular organ. Is that true?
Yeah, it is. This is more like Chinese medicine, which I have a great respect and regard for. There's a meridian that all the main body meridians will pass through the teeth. That just doesn't go through the teeth. In other words, that one might pass through the kidney and then maybe through the lungs and then through the first molar. I don't have those in front of me to remember them, but
yeah, there are charts people can find on the internet, though. I've
oh yeah,
them before.
Yeah. And what they do, this is more like energetic medicine and stuff. Whenever there's an infection or a blockage on the meridian, it can create problems. And so a lot of people that have infection, that'll create a problem with that meridian. or certainly if they have amalgam fillings in there, which is a multitude of problems, not just the mercury. So, you know, it depends on, you know, how deeply you go into this. And there's some holistic biological dentist out there that really feel that this is an important issue. And some of them don't think you should have any metals in your mouth for that reason. And today, more and more and more, we're becoming where I think this will be eventually in dentistry, metal-free.
Wow. What about heart disease and mitral valve prolapse? And we've got about 10 minutes, so I want you to save some time to tell people about your website again so they can find it and any information you want to talk about that we haven't covered.
Well, what's really interesting is, and most people don't know this, that the whole idea, for example, of gum disease, for a long time, people weren't even concerned about gum disease. They were concerned about decay. And now we find out that more and more and more that the studies show that gum disease can increase the risk and severity of many, many important health issues. For example, it can increase the risk of heart attack by up to 25%.
Really?
Yep, and stroke by a factor of 10, for example. Oh. And then it can affect diabetes. There's a new study out that the relationship of gum disease to pancreatic cancer, osteoporosis, low birth weight, preterm birth weight, respiratory problems, digestive problems. Really, it plays havoc on the immune system because you imagine this infection when it's in the gums is 24/7. So it's going on all the time, and the body hates an infection no matter where it is.
Mm-hmm.
And also, there was one study that showed that, you know, moderate to advanced gum disease can reduce life expectancy by 7 years due to all these other stresses and strains. So you imagine you have gum disease, which, you know, 80% of the population has, and then you might have amalgam fillings, which 150 to 250 million people have. There's a pretty high incidence that tens of millions of people are dealing with both of these issues that tremendously stress the immune system.
So what about mitral valve prolapse and antibiotics? Since our antibiotics aren't working like they used to, what do you do? And for the people that don't know, why do you have to take antibiotics if you have a prolapse valve?
Well, if you have that or you've had a valve replacement, any kind of artificial a substance that you have in your body, or the valve might be, you know, irregular, bacteria that get in the bloodstream can attach to these places. And they can sort of hang on there and then, you know, multiply, creating some infection there. And so what happens is when anybody that has this as a risk goes to have dental surgery done, or gum surgery, which would release a lot of these bacteria, et cetera, into the bloodstream during that procedure, everyone recommends that they have they use antibiotics prior to the surgery so that they'll be covered, so that the risk goes down. It's something that they need to deal with between their dentist and their physician to make sure they get the right antibiotic for them.
So would it be a good idea to take, I don't know how you feel about this, but colloidal silver, you know, maintenance doses, since most people do have these problems and it's not, you don't become resistant?
Well, I think it's a great adjunct. You know, I think if there was a real critical infection, you'd have to go work on something stronger.
Mm-hmm.
But as a preventive, sort of a maintenance thing, you know, there's been a lot of evidence that shows that this has been very effective for people. So, you know, it's always something to consider, and, you know, it's always something to deal with especially if you're into, you know, really healthy medicine and you're seeing a naturopath or alternative health professional. This is something definitely I would raise with them.
One more thing I guess I'd like to raise it. I know a lot of people have habits of, you know, those picks that you can get at the drugstore.
Mm-hmm.
They throw them in their drawers and then use them over and over and over without ever cleaning them.
Well, it's kind of, in a way, it's kind of gross, you know. They always should rinse them, wash them off, periodically dip them if the material can handle it, in a little peroxide or or even some Clorox or even boiling water periodically. If somebody is using it themselves, of course, it's reintroducing it to your own mouth. But I just think good hygiene warrants, you know, when it's sticking in the mouth where you have all these bacteria, that, you know, you want to clean that off.
I heard one other thing, too, one time. I heard that every time you flush your toilet, it sends out a macro spray for about 8 or 10 feet. Is that true?
Yeah.
And I can imagine that would affect the toothbrush that sits on the counter.
Yeah, if it's that close. You know, that's the word. I think it was 6 feet, what I heard.
So you brush your teeth with toilet water.
You know, I'm sure it's a little further with males. But, you know, I think if you're that close, there are things they sell in the drugstore and stuff that you can put your brush in, or you can put it in, you know, wrap it in something. Or just keep it far enough away. I don't think that's the most major concern. If you have healthy gums, the chances are, you know, you're going to be able to prevent anything from happening. I think I'd be more concerned if my gums weren't too good.
Okay.
One thing I wanted to bring up that we didn't touch on, but I think is important, and it sort of goes back to the Poison in Your Teeth book.
Okay.
Which I think that if anybody has any doubts, or they're skeptical, or they want to know more information about amalgam fillings and the harm they can do to you, The Poison in Your Teeth, you know, Mercury Amalgam Silver Fillings Hazardous to Your Health is the title, should be concerned about. And especially I want to mention Chapter 6 in that book, which deals with the relationship of mercury to the fetus, nursing baby, and child. And it talks about how the child can be exposed, or a person can be exposed to mercury for the first time from amalgam fillings at the moment of conception, and really, really makes a strong case to show that the amalgam fillings and the mercury that comes off of them that passes through the mother can go through the placenta and also through breast milk, in my opinion, is one of the primary causes of autism and learning and developmental disorders. And any woman that's considering having a baby should read this before, this book itself, but certainly that chapter, before they even consider that.
Do you think, what about our fish oil supplements? Do you think that has mercury in it?
Well, you know, that was an issue that's been raised now, because what the pro-amalgam group has been promoting is, they say, well, we need amalgam. We have to keep having amalgam. I mean, people should eat fish containing mercury. They don't like the mercury part, but they say that they need these omega-3 fatty acids, essential for our health. But today, now, you can get supplements in the health food store that actually are tested, and they will say on them, mercury-free, or this product contains no mercury.
Okay.
So now you can get what you need in regards to these fatty acids from the supplements that don't have mercury in them.
So back to the children. I didn't mean to get off that, but that thought popped in my head.
Well, it's important because, you know, you could think, well, geez, I got my amalgams out, and then you're eating all kinds of mercury-contaminated fish. And, you know, you could be reintroducing it a whole bunch of mercury, so it's important.
If you have an autistic child, we just got a couple minutes, like 3 minutes. If you have an autistic child and you do this detox program, have you seen results of the autism pull back?
Yes, there have, and this is so important. I mean, I put in that chapter, I also have a resource section of where people can go to get this kind of information. And there's been programs out there that have been very successful. The key ingredient or element here that I've seen is that these programs be initiated as soon as possible. The results of reversing some of the symptoms, et cetera, have been greater the younger the child is. As they get older, a lot of this is sort of established and might not be reversible. So it's something, you know, it's still hard. They say it takes, you know, maybe 2.5 to 3 years of age before they can really identify these symptoms. There's some other ways, and I talk about them in the book, and these resources and some of the websites, et cetera, that I recommend will give anybody that's concerned the information they need.
Okay. You want to give us your website again before we go?
Okay, I think so.
I've
been talking about
number.
It a lot, and we can only, like you say, we can only cover so much during this time.
I wish I had done that earlier. I'm so glad you brought that up. Thank you.
Well, you've asked great questions, and I'm sure it's going to generate a lot of interest, and I don't want to leave people hanging. So the information is in my book or on my website or both, and it's www.dentalwellness, and then the number 4 and the letter U.com. So dentalwellness, number 4, letter U.com. And my 800 number, in case you wrote it down wrong or you want to talk to me, I also do phone consultations around these issues, is 800-335-7755.
An excellent book, Dr. McGuire. Books, I have to say. Excellent, excellent book, so it did make me angry. Thank you.
Thank you, Eva. It's been great to be with you.
Good night.
Good night.